The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
Now on view at Skadfesh, Manish Arora's Life is Beautiful. Renowned for dazzling designs in a rainbow of colors, Manish Arora has brought the talent and craftsmanship of India's rich sartorial history to the global forefront, earning international acclaim on runways across three continents. Designing in India since the 1990s, Arora's glittering garments celebrate extravagant expressions of self through varied materials, techniques, and silhouettes in a triumphant union of Western and Eastern aesthetics adapted to today's multicultural society with a touch of humor. Find out more at scadfesh.org.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thank you for listening. The new cocktail bar, Mambo Zombie, takes cues from the afterlife and holidays like Dia de los Muertos. The owners of Joystick Game Bar, Johnny Martinez and Brandon Lai, partnered with Keisha Cyrus to open this spooky space last September. It's located above Georgia Beer Garden off Edgewood. Later this hour, we'll hear more about their creative approach to cocktails with or without alcohol and why the mixologists are so committed to flavor they juice their own sugar cane. Plus, our series, Speaking of Poetry, today features Lady Vida Poet. First, artificial intelligence, also known as AI, has seeped into just about every aspect of our daily lives, whether we like it or not. Bill Gates said AI is as revolutionary as mobile phones and the internet. Many questions about the positive use of this technology are under discussion, and Emory University is at the forefront of those conversations. The AI Humanity Initiative is using the technology with the goals of helping to improve human health, generate economic opportunities, and promote social justice. Joining me now via Zoom to tell us more about the initiative is Emory Provost and Executive Vice President for Academic Affairs, Professor Ravi Belamkonda. Welcome to City Lights.
Thank you so much, Lois. It's an honor and pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Your decision to recruit between 60 and 75 new leading faculty over the next few years as part of the AI Humanity Initiative reveals the depth of your belief in the technology. Though we hear more and more references to artificial intelligence, many people don't understand the meaning. How do you define AI?
Thank you for that question. AI is indeed, I believe, a transformative technology. And what's happened is two simultaneous developments have caused us to be here today. One is there's an explosion of data, a sort of digital representation of our health, of law, of our preferences for buying things and reading the news. So there's an explosion of a digital representation of the physical world and our wants as humans. And along with that, there has been a revolution in algorithms, computer programs that can make sense of data. And so the confluence of these two have resulted in an ability for us to find patterns that are difficult to find for humans, but possible to find with machines and computer science. And hence the term artificial intelligence. And the latest iteration, where everybody's heard of ChatGPT, has to do with programs now that are able to make sense of data without it being labeled laboriously. So without me telling a program, this is a cat, this is a dog, this is a house, programs now are now able to learn using this transformer technology patterns of strings of data or pixels. And hence we are at a very exciting time in artificial intelligence and its applications.
So why are so many people scared?
There is reason to be, because in 1950, a professor proposed a test called the Turing test. And the idea was, if you were behind a screen and asked a question, would you be able to deduce as a human being if the entity answering the questions was a machine or a human? And until very recently, no machine has ever passed the Turing test. And now with ChatGPT and the large language models, that test has been passed. So the first time in our history, we're not able to tell if the entity answering your question and mine is a machine or a human, and we're not able to tell the difference. And hence it's new and transformative. And hence, like any new technology, we have reason to try to regulate it and watch it carefully, so it's used for good and not harmful purposes.
And how is Emory utilizing AI technology in the various departments? Would you tell us more about the AI Humanity Initiative?
So Emory, in its history, has always cared deeply about certain questions of human health, of right and wrong, of justice, of asking questions about our history and things like this. And we're a liberal arts university with a powerhouse medical school, law school, nursing school, and business school. And so what we are saying is that to do the things that we care about deeply, the liberal arts, including the arts, which I know a lot of your listeners are very interested in, as well as business and health, we need to use the best available technologies to do that. And hence, our initiative is unique in that we're not just hiring or building a computer science department, which we are also doing, but we're embedding AI researchers in the context of the things we care about, including the English department, the School of Law, the School of Medicine, the School of Business, and so the idea, and public health. So the idea is that we will use AI as a tool to serve humanity, which is consistent with our motto of knowledge in the service of humanity.
You mentioned ChatGPT. It's certainly become a flashpoint in university circles, in academic circles. How are you dealing with Emory professors and students about plagiarizing with AI?
Fantastic question. But it's not a question that's new, in the sense that when calculators first became available, we were very worried about students' ability to do arithmetic. And when computers and laptops became ubiquitous, we were very worried about letting students take laptops into classes. And now we're at a fork and we have a decision to make. Do we embrace ChatGPT and what it has to offer and other technologies like it, and teach our students how to use it in a discriminating way to supplement what they're trying to do? Or do we try to restrict and ban it so we can teach our students some basic skills that they need to learn either way? And this is an active conversation, but I personally and our faculty are leaning towards our honor policy, which covers cheating of any different kind. We don't need new rules, but also thinking hard about how we use this technology to do better. It turns out, at least at the current iteration, the technology is great at producing a first draft, but it's not fantastic yet. And I believe we need to use this tool just as we've used laptops or calculators or other technologies to do the things we're interested in doing. Typing a paper, when I did my undergraduate thesis, I had to go to a typewriter. Every time there was a mistake, they had to do some special thing to erase it. And now we have laptops that do work for us and help us think. And I believe AI will also help us do the things that we as humans like to do better, easier, and faster.
If you are just joining us, this is City Lights on WABE. I'm Lois Reitzes discussing the future of AI and the arts with Emory University professor and provost Ravi V. Bellamkonda. Some experts have acknowledged the positive use and the potential for even greater use of AI, but suggested that maybe there needs to be greater regulation or testing of programs before they're rolled out. What are your thoughts about that?
I agree entirely that we need to do that. So it turns out that the pattern recognition is only as good as the data that is used to train these models. And it turns out that there are lots of gaps in the data itself. We have a professor called Lauren Klein in our English department and our QTM department who studies what's called data justice. And she points out that there are important census data and other data that has data about women entirely missing. And the problem with this is when you train an algorithm or a program, no matter how smart, on data that is flawed, then you are not likely to get good results. For example, we have another professor, Judy Gochoya, who's a radiologist here at Emory, and she's created a database of 3.5 million breast cancer images. But for the first time, this data set has a diverse population in it. So when an algorithm learns to read these images, it is learning from all our populations and not just one population. So it's very important to be aware of what the algorithm is presenting so that it is trained on data that is representative of all the things that we would like the program to answer. The other thing that we need to be mindful of, speaking about art, we have this technology now called generative AI, which is producing images. Now, again, these programs are trained on billions of images, and a lot of these images, we don't have permission from the artist to train the programs on. And ethically, this is problematic. Programs like DALL-E or Stable Diffusion are generating these images trained on data that they don't have permission to use. And recently, there was a Supreme Court ruling about Andy Warhol, as you may have heard.
Yes.
Where it was found out that, where the court ruled that he actually violated copyright law when he based his work on these pictures, right? So there is a dilemma that these databases that are used are there's an ethical dilemma for generative AI from this space. So these are all issues ahead of us that we have to resolve before we move on.
Yes, the professors whose research you cited are most impressive. They are also dealing with highly sophisticated samples, I guess. Their data is advanced, to say the least. But with the kind of data that's aggregated from the internet and social media, that is not discerned by AI, is it? And isn't that part of the danger with students embracing ChatGPT or the public at large just putting faith in AI?
You're very astute and right in that ChatGPT actually is not verified objective truth, what it generates. In fact, it generates lots of errors, which is why Google hesitated to put something out for for public consumption. And yet it is intoxicating what it's able to do, write poems, generate images. And so there is a vast experiment playing out, and where Microsoft and OpenAI decided to use us pretty much to refine their program as a large test case. And some other companies like Google were much more conservative and wanted to get all those things right before they released products. And here we are. So you're exactly right. Lots of information on the internet is exactly false. And any program that learns on that information is also generating false impressions. So this is part of what we are teaching our students, that ChatGPT is an interesting tool, but it doesn't replace learning. It doesn't replace discriminative thinking, which is why, as a liberal arts institution, that is precisely what we teach our students. The ability to discriminate in a nuanced way, right and wrong. The ability to make progress with incomplete information. And so the technology doesn't replace the need for students with the powers of discrimination, analysis, comprehension, context, these kinds of skills. And hence, I'm not too worried about students at Emory being put out of jobs and such.
Speaking of Emory students and a positive use of AI for art, would you tell us about the Emory Magazine cover art contest?
Thank you so much for asking. So we wanted to do a feature article on AI, and we thought, and we called this "The Human Heart Leads the Machine World." And we wanted to use a photograph or an illustration that captured the mood of the technology and the story. So we thought it was amazing to use our students, and they used an app called the Wombo Dream App to generate AI images. And one of our students, Sharon Lee, and her work was selected for this. And so it was quite appropriate that a graduate student in medicine was able to generate this incredible piece of art that we used as a cover for our story, you know, and she won a cash prize. And again, another use of the technology to express what we like to do impulsively, which is to create art. And I think of it as a tool to do that. And that's what Sharon Lee, our graduate student, did in generating that cover art.
I read that Emory is offering a new minor in artificial intelligence. What does that program entail?
That's right. So the idea is that because it's a transformative technology, we don't want a world that is all computer scientists, and that would be quite boring, I believe. And so the idea is that we would like the literature major who's interested in examining texts from the 16th century to know how to use what's called natural language processing to assist them in their work. So what I want is a history major to continue to be a history major, an English major to be an English major, and a major in poetry to be a poetry major, but to use the power of this technology. And so the idea is you can do a minor, which is a sequence of typically 5 to 6 classes, and then you have sufficient proficiency to use this minor and the knowledge gained in the pursuit of what your true passion is. And so the idea of the liberal arts being not quantitative is a new construction, right? The original liberal arts had both quantitative and non-quantitative elements to it. And we're being true to our liberal arts education mission to make this minor available to all our majors. And it's purposely constructed such that you don't have to be a computer scientist to do this minor. It's available to all our students with some basic math proficiency.
And what can you tell us about the new center that's focused on AI learning and promoting AI literacy across campus?
We're very excited about the center. And again, it's designed to be accessible to all of Emory, our staff, our medical students, our fellows, our professors, and our students, to, in a bite-sized way, access what this AI hoopla is all about. So once it launches, we will make available workshops, 1 hour, 3 hours, weekend workshops, all without accreditation, not without credentialing. So the idea is that in whatever form somebody wants to engage with AI, we will make it ubiquitously available for them to learn so that they can then decide to use it or not use it for what they wish to do.
Professor Ravi V. Bellamkonda is the provost of Emory University. More information about their AI Humanity Initiative is available on our website, wabe.org/citylights. In a moment, our series, speaking of poetry, shines a light on Lady Vida Poet. Amplifying Atlanta, this is WABE.
Support for WABE comes from 100 Miles, a nonprofit committed to preserving Georgia's 100-mile coast. Protecting this critical coastal ecosystem takes all of us. Watch the stories of the innovators and future leaders who help keep our coast flowing at OurGeorgiaCoast.org.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is City Lights on WABE. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thank you for being here. It's time now for our series, Speaking of Poetry, where Atlanta's creative lyricists share the rhyme and reason behind the art of language.
Hello, hello. My name is Davida Williams Poe, aka Lady Vida Poet. And I describe my poetry as, I would say, quality creative expression. I describe my poetry as observative. I definitely take a look around the world and I pull in the experiences, I pull in the senses of the things that I go through, and I put it through my words. Whenever I get up on stage and perform, I notice that people relate to what I'm saying, and it's a journey through life, love, heartache, art, and observations and reflections. I got started in poetry in the ninth grade. We had poetry shows in the library during National Poetry Month, and we had different activities with poetry in early high school. And my teachers, they encouraged me to write more, to perform more, to get up on stage and do my poetry in front of others. They gave me the confidence I needed to just, you know, take my words and bring them out to the stage for people to hear and for them to experience. I'm inspired to write because I see my world going around me, and I want to be a voice for it. I grew up being a middle child, and I had an older sister. I have a younger brother, and I always felt like my voice wasn't really heard. And my poetry gives me a chance to really express myself, really tell people what's going on in my life. And it's not just saying, hey, this is my life. These are emotions and feelings that everybody feels. My writing process is it's kind of up and down. It changes over time. You know, I'm not the same person I was back in the day. I'm not the same person I was yesterday. Some days I change day by day. I take into account that a poem is a journey through the senses. Sight, sound, touch, taste, smell. Writing a news article is who, what, when, where, and why. But a poem, you get to pull in the different senses. And that is pretty much my writing process. I write the five senses on the top of the page, and I travel through whatever experience, whatever observatory experience, whatever life-changing experience, I travel through it through the senses. What did that experience smell like to me? What did that experience taste like to me? You know, metaphorically, of course, but my poetry is going through the five senses and describing exactly what that experience was. I approach performing my poetry like an actor would. An actor gets up on stage and they change into whatever the words are. You know, they become the poem, as some people like to say. So in my performance, I look at the words and I study the words and I kind of become the poem. You have to embody the words and explore them up on stage by, you know, using hand gestures or using eye contact, you know, walking through the audience or connecting with the people. You have to use your body to perform the poem because that's what you're up on stage to do. Here's an excerpt from my poem, In the Midst of All the Quiet. In the midst of all the quiet, you got an inner riot telling you to get up and break the silence. Take a step, try to intercept, try to break the mold. Remember what the past untold. Learn from mistakes, reiterate, back up, let's try again. I'm looking out for true friends, I can count them all on one hand. Trust the chosen few that understand and comprehend what I'm going through. Try to find the meaning in the looking glass I'm looking through. So that's an excerpt from my poem, In the Midst of All the Quiet. And it kind of describes my poetry because I write my poetry in silence. I need to have concentration and focus. But the words that come out on the page, they're just kind of sometimes all over the place. So you have to wrangle them together and make them, you know, an organized type of poem. I chose to call Atlanta my home because I'm originally from Augusta, Georgia. That's about 2 hours down I-20. And I chose Atlanta as my home because Atlanta is a land of opportunity. Atlanta is a land of entertainment. Atlanta gave me the opportunity to be Lady Vida Poet. There's so many different places to be inspired in Atlanta. There's so many different people to connect with and collaborate with to expand your art. So I chose to make Atlanta my home because of that. I like to go to different poetry shows when I have the time, but I do host on the second Saturday Westview Makerspace. It's over there off of Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. It's from 5:30 to 8 p.m. every second Saturday. You can hear my work on Instagram at Lady V Da Poet. That's LadyVeeDaPoet. Our show page at Art Out Loud ATL. You can also go to Facebook, facebook.com/LadyVeeDaPoet or /LadyVSpokenWord. We also have the Art Out Loud Creative Space, Alan Poe Studios. Alan Poe is my husband, and he's a music producer. He's a DJ. He makes all of our logos, all of our t-shirt designs. He also is my co-host on Live from the Beat Lab. We have a Facebook Live show that explains how to make your art professional. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Lady Vida Poet and our series Speaking of Poetry. More information about Lady V's work, as well as our entire Speaking of series, is on our website, wabe.org/speakingof. Coming up, we'll celebrate life and the afterlife with the owners of Mambo Zombie. Amplifying Atlanta, this is 90.1 WABE. This is City Lights on WABE. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thank you for being here. The new cocktail bar Mambo Zombie takes cues from the afterlife and holidays like the Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos. The owners of Joystick Game Bar, Johnny Martinez and Brandon Lai, partnered with Keisha Cyrus to open this spooky space last September. It's located above the Georgia Beer Garden off Edgewood. Johnny, Brandon, and Keisha all join me now via Zoom. Welcome to City Lights.
Hello. Thank you so much.
Hello.
Thank you, Lois.
That was exciting, Lois.
Right?
This is so cool. I don't know.
Well, it's great to have you here. I'm curious how the three of you connected.
Well, we were all in prison together a long time ago.
Yeah, Johnny and I got committed into the women's prison where we met Keisha, who was the warden at the time.
She sure seemed soft-hearted for a warden.
She didn't last long in that job.
Okay.
We all met kind of separately, I guess. Keisha and I met when we started working together behind the bar over at Surpass True Food Restaurant, which is unfortunately closed since. It was a great restaurant. And I had known Johnny for several years before that. When I was working at Sun in My Belly over in Kirkwood, and he was regularly coming in, and we just became friends from that. Then at some point, Keisha and Johnny met. I don't really know. I don't remember how that happened.
I think it was when Johnny came to visit you at the bar, and then I just met Johnny that way.
Yes, I feel like it was either at the bar or at a Halloween party, which would be appropriate, I think, at this point.
It was a social setting. It was either work or doing something, but then we became fast friends after that.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned a Halloween party. Would you tell us the inspiration behind Mambo Zombie?
Sure. I think Mambo, it's supposed to be a celebration of the afterlife of the people who have passed. You mentioned El Dia de los Muertos, and there's a lot of cultures around the world that have something similar in place, right? I think we're unique in America where we tend to be a little more afraid to talk about death and the afterlife. And after the pandemic, because, you know, Mambo was certainly born out of the pandemic, you know, I think all experienced losses. I think we all had either known someone who had passed or known multiple people. I know we all lost beloved pets at around the same time. And there was just a natural bubbling up out of those experiences.
Hmm. So the story behind the name of the bar, if Mambo is something joyous, where does a zombie come in?
Mambo Zombie is actually a song title from a group called Escorzo. And they're very interesting because it's a mix of musicians from Spain and from Latin America and from the Caribbean. They're a little irreverent. They have an entire album that's just about cannibalism, for instance.
Okay.
But it's also joyful too, right? Like, they don't take themselves too seriously, but they put out very good music. And hearing that song over and over and over again, it became sort of an unofficial theme song for what should be going on above Georgia Beer Garden. And that eventually just became the name.
When you enter the bar, you walk through a glowing pink casket. No subtlety to the bar's theme there. Would you tell us more about the other macabre decorations?
We want this bar to be a different space. We want it to be, and not just a different physical space, but we want you to move from this world into a space that connects you to the next world, both mentally and emotionally. And so I think it's representative. We want you to know that you are going into something different, and we want to set the tone very early. And I think with Mambo Zombie, you immediately know what you're getting when you walk in, but it's certainly not the only piece of art that's fun in there.
Yeah, we've got something interesting to look at everywhere in that space, which is really exciting. And there is definitely a skull motif, you know, obviously referencing the afterlife and the death portion of it, but it's not horror. It's not foreboding. There's, you know, a skeleton llama somewhere in that place and little characters that, you know, could come across as demonic, but they are honestly just having a good time. They're more spirits, I would say,
sweet
than demons.
Sweet devils.
Yes, exactly.
Sweet devils.
I love
yes.
that. That's also a great cocktail name, so thank you for that.
Yes, for sure.
Right?
Okay, Keisha, I would love some devil's food, you know, some chocolate in there.
Oh,
just saying.
Got it.
Just saying.
Lois, if you show up, you could have whatever you want.
Oh, thank you.
It's going to have all the things. So, and then along with what Brandy was saying with the skulls, our back bar is basically a giant ofrenda, which is a celebration of Day of the Dead. So we have all our spirits up there, which is like, here's an offering of all the booze you could have and drink and enjoy life. But we like to celebrate because we have candles up there and it just has this big altar kind of a feel. So I think the whole bar just kind of celebrates life in a way of celebration at the same time, from the door to the back bar, even all the way through. So it's really cool to have those things. Your eyes just hit a little bit of everything and it connects. It just connects in that way. So
it really is a visual experience. You know, we worked with a lot of local artists who were able to help us out. You know, the front door has got this wonderful masked being that feels otherworldly that Aaliyah Hurst locally made. And we have this beautiful mosaic on the side of the bar, one portion of it that Jennifer Freeman had made, which is amazing. Andres Palacio did this beautiful mural for us. And I think they really helped sort of pull it all together. But if you're looking for a feel, it's something in between the movie Coco and maybe a 1970s bar in, let's say, that Grace Jones and, I just forgot his name, that Grace Jones.
Telly Savalas.
And Telly Savalas would go too.
I mean, his death mask is up there, so we have to remember his name.
Yeah, right, that's, oh yeah, that's true. If you're looking for interesting pieces, it's probably, we have a death mask and it's Telly Savalas. And very few people realize who it is because sadly, very few people, you know, remember Telly.
Can recognize Telly Savalas' face from a plaster cast.
Yes, evidently.
Didn't he look kind of like Uncle Fester?
He did. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Oh, you are not wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, who loves you, Fester, baby? Okay.
Well, I just applaud you for engaging local artists. And there are murals outside as well.
Oh, yes. Those murals are more related to Georgia Beer Garden, but they actually seamlessly work in well. There's also, we have a very large statue in that front courtyard, which is an everyman statue, which in this case is Solidarity Everyman, since we do so many political events.
Fantastic. What would a Solidarity Everyman, or in the name of gender equality, every human, every person drink?
I guess a universal drink that a lot of people go to, which is luckily that we do carry a lot of tequila. And it's anything like tequila, whether you're having a sipper or just doing a shot for some reason, or just a really great cocktail, tequila is like king. And then people moving forward with their palates and getting into mezcal these days. So those agave spirits are really on trend. I wouldn't say on trend. It's been a thing for a while. It's been my thing for a while. But I see people lately, you know, getting into those things and really enjoying it. So I think across the board, you could find someone like Akeisha and then someone like a Lois go, make me a drink with tequila. Let's have a, you know. And tequilas are so fun to work with a mezcal because the nuance is just so different for a lot of people or whatever. You could make them taste sweet or you could get something that's savory. So I think that's for us, that's a big one. Even though we do a lot of rum drinks, one of our major cocktails is rum-based. So I say right now, across the board, I've had ladies and adult gentlemen who have muscles drink our Monkey Screwed, which is a rum-based cocktail. It's a little sweet, but savory. So, you know, it's really hard to tell. I'm glad we're hitting it on all bases here. So,
yeah, but that sounds very intriguing, yeah. The Monkey Screwed.
Oh, yeah.
And tell me about the name, please.
I got inspired by this cocktail. A friend of mine went to France and went to this tiki bar out there. And he was like, oh, I had this great drink. And the name of the drink that they had has nothing to do with the drink that I make, but I just thought it was so clever. So it wasn't called Monkey Screwed. It was called a Monkey Sea or something like that. So I took that and played on making a duo of drinks called Monkey Sea, Monkey Screwed, because it's like, you know, monkey see, monkey do kind of a thing. And I wanted to play with banana and the rums. I play because in the beginning we always said banana daiquiris. Like for some reason, that was our hitting point of the drinks at this bar will remind you of the, like banana daiquiris. So I wanted to have a drink that was boozy, but approachable. And then you feel like, because there is a floater of like overproof on top of the drink. So you feel like, oh, I'm screwed. But you don't know it till it's too late. It's, you know, you've already had it, you've downed one, it's very balanced, and so you're like, oh man, so you're like monkey screwed. And then to piggyback the tether off of that, or whatever tandem drink to that, is the Monkey Sea, which is more of a savory cocktail featuring the same rum that I do in house. And then you're like Monkey Sea, which is still boozy, so it's kind of like, all right, you're screwed, we're screwed, I see you, let's have this drink. So that's where it came from for me. It's kind of monkey screwed. I mean, it's a long-winded way to say that, but It was that simple.
No, I think that's very playful and very interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I noticed looking at your menu, there are several non-alcoholic drinks. Why include those?
Well, I mean, with everybody getting off a pandemic, you know, people were like, apparently that's when people were drinking the most is during the pandemic, because we're just either all at home or, I mean, the only thing that was a game in town were package stores or a bar. They were like, yeah, let's do that. So I think going into the next year, I think people are trying to, you know, do better for themselves a little bit. And or just because maybe you don't want to drink all the time, but you still like to hang out and go out to places. So we want to kind of put that into our model, because, you know, something that's just not like making, oh, I want a non-alcoholic drink and throw some juices together. I want to try to do those things because we juice everything fresh. I'll just start there. And then, but also we want to make things that were true to what we do, which is like the tapache and the chicha morada and aqua fresco that we try to feature every week. So I think it was just really important to have those things. I get more people now. I will run out of non-alcoholic beverages early because a lot of people come out and they want to hang out, but they don't need to get, you know, they'll have a beer, but then they'll maybe want to be able to cool it for the rest of the night. So I think it's just super important to leave it open for those people out there. Like, it's okay to still come out with your friends without being, or you're the designated driver that night, you know?
Yeah. No, I think it's very inclusive, and it shows a lot of thought that you're willing to put the same creativity into the non-alcoholic drinks.
Oh, yeah. These things are just as festive as the cocktails. And Keisha did a lot of research when it comes to just really, really, really old school ways of treating some of the fruits that are native to kind of the Mesoamerican region, you know, the pineapples and, you know, that the tapache is made from, you know, it's using husks. It's using the core of the pineapple as well, which things a lot of people aren't as familiar with. And these are, you know, techniques and classic drinks from, you know, pre-Incan empire days, which I am not a history major, so I do not know when that was.
They didn't have juicers in pre-Incan days?
Well, no.
Would they? Yeah, they would go through and evidently use like purple corn. And, you know, for me, it was a revelation to have some of these drinks that Keisha's made that are just as delicious as the ones with alcohol, to not have alcohol. And, you know, I think what her emphasis on everything being fresh has been, I think, really just changes everything when it comes to that menu. If I have a bumper sticker that I use over and over again, it's that, you know, we don't buy sugarcane juice, we buy sugarcane. You know, Keisha made sure we had a sugarcane juicer behind the bar, and I can't think of another place in Atlanta that has that right now.
I was eager to ask about that, Keisha. Why do you juice, that is in the verb, Sam, why do you juice real sugar canes instead of buying the sugar cane syrup?
I mean, it's 100% difference. And don't get me wrong, like, I've bought sugar cane juice from like a farmer's market and it's fine. But, you know, after a day or two, it's still fine, but it loses kind of like this really nice thing about it. So when you're able to get someone order a drink, even if it's just straight sugar cane juice or the cocktail that we use with it called the Madame Gorgeous, by the way. Fresh sugar cane juice just looks, it's just really, it's just bright, it's fresh. It's still a little vegetable, not kind of sweet as you think it would be. You just have that, even just right out the juicer, it's phenomenal. And the look on people's faces when you run that thing through, it's like, ah, huh, look at that show. You know, so okay. It's just kind of, it's really amazing to kind of, because nobody doesn't really see it that often. So you just press out this fresh juice like you're on a beach somewhere, but you're in the middle of Edgewood Avenue, you know? So it kind of transports you a little bit to like that last cruise you took somewhere or something. I don't know. But I think it's just super important when we have that there. I thought it would just be a really great way to showcase things that like, hey, we're doing it for real here. We're not trying to give you the shortcut. We care about how our flavor profiles come off and what I'm very super proud of that. I think it just makes me excited when people get excited when I turn that sugarcane juicer on. So I'm here for it.
If you are just joining us, this is City Lights on WABE. I'm Lois Reitzes speaking with Mambo Zombie partners Keisha Cyrus, Johnny Martinez, and Brandon Lay. I read that you are of Jamaican heritage, and I wondered if it was some sort of tribute to your background.
Yeah, on a lot of levels, yes, because I know when I was a kid and I would go back to Jamaica for the summer, sugarcane was always part of like whatever. I mean, we didn't have it all the time, but there used to be a guy in my grandmother's neighborhood that would have a cart, and he would come from where he had, and he would just have fresh sugarcane, like sugarcane right off of the plantation, whatever, off the fields. And just, you know, he's going down the street and he'll stop like an ice cream man, which is crazy to think of that, and have it like old school, crank it out. And either he'll juice it or he'll chop it up where you could chew on a stick, you know, just kind of have like that fresh bite of sugarcane. And I just remember that when I was a kid, I just thought it was, it's a really great memory, because that was when you knew my summer had begun. I'm out of New York, back in Jamaica, and this is it. It was just good stuff all the time. And I drank sugarcane juice a lot when I was a kid. You know, you get older, those things fall to the wayside, but then, you know, nostalgia kicks in. And when we had the opportunity to open this bar, it was like legitimately, I think I looked at Brandon, I was like, sugarcane juicer? You know, so it was kind of like, so, and luckily, you know, they let, you know, they gave me the freedom to make those choices and to, you know, instead of reeling it back in. So I think it's very part, and it's not just Jamaican culture, but a lot of, you know, South American culture is the same way. So it ties into all of us on that level. So it's not like we're Jamaican, but then also somebody from Mexico knows that. I've spoken to people in South America, I'm like, yeah, I did this all the time as a kid. I love it. And Puerto Rico is like everything. So I like that connective tissue with that one juice it brings to a lot of people. It's just really cool.
Oh, I like that description, connective tissue.
Oh, Lois.
The dumbest thing anyone could do is rein in or reel back Keisha Cyrus. You just let her go.
100%.
Amazing things will always happen. And anytime Keisha Cyrus looks at me and goes, ask me a question like this, I know it's going to be a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Steven Spielberg is the Keisha Cyrus of directors.
What?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like he, she can give you seriousness and something that is just so leveled and nuanced and there's so much going on. And she can also give you something that's just straightforward joy, but also simple, right? I actually, it's funny. The Madame Gorgeous has become, I think, one of my favorites, and there's not a lot in it, but it's just so perfectly blended and well-crafted that it's, I just keep going back to it over and over again.
Yeah, this is a love fest. I really adore this conversation.
it's really cool. I mean, working with these two have been a joy for the last 10 or so years, maybe. And it's been great that, you know, we have such a great working relationship and personal relationship. You know, you don't get to be around people for this long and still have fun just hanging out together. So the fact that we're in this thing together is fantastic. It's like one of the better parts of my professional career, so to speak. So I'm totally going to dig in for us when it comes to this bar.
Okay. I don't know if this was the idea of the Steven Spielberg of mixology or Brandon, if it was yours or Johnny's idea, but I saw that when you offer snacks, among those snacks will be dried crickets.
Ah,
that is a Keisha Cyrus original there.
Okay, tell us more.
Well, it was just a play on something, you know, in Mexico, they have those cricket snacks that you either, and they do it in a guacamole or tacos. And I will by no means call myself anything, a chef or a cook. I mean, that's where it falls short. But learning from some chefs that I've talked to and just seeing things and again, research and just finding out flavors, you know, I've worked in kitchens and restaurants before. So I was like, I think I'm gonna try to play with that. And I think because of what we're doing, the cricket snack thing just kind of was something I just thought about because I worked at a chef a while back, and shout out to Andy Gonzalez over the Companion. And he did something that he got from somewhere. And he was like, that's not really his thing. But I was like, how about if I try to do it this way, talking to him. And I just decided to do it in a Chex Mix kind of a way. That way it's not too much of just the crickets. You still have Chex Mix. So it's really just sort of a little snacky thing we were working on. It was just fun and cute. A lot of people get turned off by it, but some people are really all about it. And I love it when people go in and, you know, head first on a snack. It's seasoned well, it's done right, it's crispy. You can never tell. You never know, so you'll be fine. So.
Wait, but are you going to let people know that there are crickets in
the Chex Mix? Yeah, of course, always. It's in the description. I mention it right away because, again, people, they're not too open to a lot of things, which is fine. But we definitely let them know that the flavors are there, what it's about, why we do it, what our thought process was behind doing it. So we never just surprise people like, here you go.
Crickets. The flavors just jump into your mouth.
So yeah, it was just a way to pay homage to, you know, Mexico and the little bit, what besides our drinks, but also in like the little food offerings that we give. So that's really just where that came from.
Well, Johnny, before we go, would you or you, Brandon and Keisha, like to give our listeners a sneak preview of Mambo Zombie's restroom?
I think we could all talk about that. No. Yeah, well, there's two of them. And so one of them is definitely for everyone. And there's one that's more for the strong, for those who are not weak at heart. If there is one part of the bar that's a little more horrific, it would be our baby doll bathroom or restroom. It is definitely at least inspired by the island of those dolls in Mexico City. Yeah, that's there where the, what do you call those things? The canals.
The floating gardens.
The floating gardens. And yeah. It is not for the weak at heart.
We can't say for certain whether any of those baby dolls are haunted.
We can't.
But it does seem likely.
I've been laughed at by those dolls.
So this is not like baby changing tables.
No, I would not leave my baby or anyone's baby in there alone.
Yeah, no.
Not at all. Yes, I've seen adult men walk out of that bathroom. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, with just men going, nope, no thank you, and walk right back out. So
yeah, that's my favorite reaction when people open the door and say, nope. Is there another bathroom?
Yeah, it's really fun and unique in there.
But no indication as to which is which. So good luck.
Mambo Zombie partners, Brandon Lay, Keisha Cyrus, and Johnny Martinez. The theme bar is open above the Georgia Beer Garden on Edgewood Avenue. And more information is on our website, wabe.org. You've been listening to City Lights, our daily exploration of arts and culture. Tomorrow at 11 a.m., we'll kick off Pride Month and hear about the Out Down South exhibition on view at the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. If you missed part of today's show, like our earlier discussion about AI and the arts, you could catch up through our podcast or on our website, wabe.org/citylights. There you'll find a complete archive of our stories so you can listen to City Lights on your schedule. City Lights senior producer is Kim Drobes. Our producers are Summer Evans and Janine Etter, and our engineer is Shelley Canavy. I'm your host, Lois Reitzes, and we want you to connect with City Lights on social media. We're at WABE City Lights on Facebook and Instagram, and you can follow me on Twitter at LOISREITZES. Thanks for listening to WABE Atlanta.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you donated to WABE yet? I know you've heard us talking about why it's important, but it doesn't have to be this big decision. You can give at whatever amount fits your budget. It can be a spur of the moment thing. You already get so much out of public radio, so just go for it. Visit wabe.org/donate and become a member right now. And thank you.